Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with Linda Anguish. She is the Director of Certification Products for the HR Certification Institute, and Lori Parham, State Director of the AARP. And today we're talking with Linda Anguish. She is the Director of Certification Products for the HR Certification Institute. Linda, thanks for being on the show today.
Well, thanks very much for having me, David.
You know, back on September 24th here, you guys talked about a brand new series of two certifications that are coming out. First one, the HRBP, and then the HRMP. And for those who don't know the acronyms by heart, the Human Resource Business Professional and the Human Resource Management Professional certifications. These are two brand new ones that are coming out by the HR Certification Institute, and I guess it's one of the main things we're going to be talking about today, because I know I'm excited to learn about those. That said, I'd like to first start and establish it by saying, what exactly is the HR Certification Institute?
Well, thanks for asking. We are actually, David, the probably premier issuer of HR professional certifications. We have been in existence since 1976. We are an affiliated organization with the Society for Human Resource Management, who I'm sure you're aware of is one of the largest HR membership organizations around the world. But we are actually a separate, independent organization. We have our own board of directors, and that is something that's required by our accreditation body, the National Commission for Certifying Agencies. And to be a certifier, to be an accredited certifier, you must really be an independent third party that's validating the knowledge of individuals in a certain profession, and ours is human resources. So as I mentioned, back in 1976, we began offering what most people probably are most familiar with in terms of our certifications, the PHR, Professional in Human Resources, and the SPHR, the Senior Professional in Human Resources. And those are our largest certifications. However, in total, we now have a total of six, and we have 130,000 current individuals who hold one or more of our certifications in over 100 countries around the world.
Now, because you do certify as a third party, and people do a lot affiliate you with the SHRM organization, tell me a little bit about that affiliation, if I could, just to make sure that people understand the difference between the two organizations. I think the listeners will know who SHRM is, the Society for Human Resource Management, but most people do think that you're simply a body of it, so it's interesting to know that you're actually a third party.
Yes, that is correct. Again, we are affiliates in the standpoint that we have obviously a very large common community of interest, the HR professional, many of whom are members of SHRM, and we also have a large pool of certificates, some of whom are members by SHRM. It's not a requirement for either of our organizations that you have to be affiliated with the other, but we do have a large common body of individuals with common interests, and so SHRM is very helpful in terms of promoting our certifications. Also, as an independent certifying agency, we are not permitted to provide the actual preparation or training for our exams, because we really must be neutral in terms of any method one uses to review or prepare for an exam. So SHRM fulfills that need, as do other agencies, by preparing actually training and review materials for people who want some additional little preparation in terms of getting ready for our exams. But our exams are experience-based. And in order to be eligible to take them, you must have a certain combination of education and experience in order to apply for the exams. And then, of course, demonstrating successful performance on the exams is what earns you your credentials or the letters that you can carry after your name that indicate you hold one of our certifications.
Well, I think it's important, you know, a lot of people look at this as an education body. I mean, typically if you're putting letters after your name, it's because you receive extra and additional education. So if you could, just as we prepare to talk about these two new certifications, talk to us about some of the prep work that has to go into taking these exams that get you certified and why it's so important to have that done.
Well, as I mentioned, our certifications do require some prior education and or experience in the field of human resources at the professional level. And they are generalist certifications. So basically, they test your knowledge in a wide range of functional areas under the umbrella of human resources. And many HR professionals do hold generalist responsibilities where they have some responsibility for all of the functional areas, but also many HR professionals have come to specialize or spend more of their time in one or another functional area and might need some additional preparation or some additional study in areas in which they're less familiar. So we encourage people to do some self-reflection prior to taking the exams. There are a number of different assessments vehicles that you can take to sort of try out what you might be tested on. Number one, we publish all of our bodies of knowledge, and so it's very important to become familiar with them and be honest about how much you've really been exposed to each of them in order to ensure your success. You may also choose to take some type of an assessment and see how you score, what areas you might be very strong in, and what areas you might be needing some additional preparation. And in those areas where either you haven't had much exposure or perhaps you haven't worked in that area for some time, you might want to take the time to either do some self-study, do some reading, take a class, and there are a number of different vehicles. These days, with technology being what it is, you can find virtual preparation classes. You can find them at colleges and universities. You can do it on a self-study basis if you wish. So there's lots of methodologies to get you up to speed in all of the functional areas for the certification that you're pursuing. Most people do find that it's helpful to do some review. But again, as an independent third-party credentialing agency, we don't require or recommend any specific type of preparation. It's all unique to the individual based on their own particular strengths and what they bring into the exam.
No, that's great. I think, you know, certainly as an HR professional, we know that there are critical ways for individuals to help improve and also to show the value not only for themselves, but also to their organizations. And also I do know that it's something that employers are looking for today. They're looking for certified individuals who can help their organizations, and it's certainly a great resume enhancer if you're looking for it in the HR world. So tell me a little bit about these two new products and why, first of all, they were necessary to bring forward.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned to you previously, our most well-known credentials, the PHR and the SPHR, really were founded here in North America and have their greatest concentration of HR professionals here because a large part of the exams do concern employment law. And of course, that has a great impact on the HR profession. And as more and more individuals became certified and held those credentials, we started to get requests from individuals outside of the United States, first of all, to take the exams. And with the advent of computer-based technology, that was easy for them to do. But then when they took the exams, they felt, gee, a lot of this content really isn't relevant to me. If I am an HR practitioner in Europe or Asia, it might be nice to know something about U.S. employment law, but it's not really relevant to me in terms of my day-to-day processing of human resources. So number one, folks outside of North America really didn't feel that it was very relevant, and secondly, they didn't always do as well either, because what we were testing was not something they were experiencing on a regular basis. So we began to get calls from people saying, we want to have a credential, can you develop one for country X, Y, or Z? And certification, when it's done right, is a pretty time-consuming and pretty expensive process. You really need to make sure that your exams are valid and that they're up to date and constantly monitored and verified. And so to develop a unique certification for every country did not seem cost-efficient or effective. So the HR Certification Institute Board of Directors struggled with this for a while. And actually, in early 2004, working with SHRM, we developed another credential called the GPHR, the Global Professional in Human Resources, but that developed into a product that was more for individuals who worked across borders. So it was very focused on things like immigration and tax issues and things that you could define in common for the HR professional that was working across borders. There's a very good market for that, for individuals who work for multinational companies, but it really still did not address the need for the in-country HR practitioner, wasn't working across borders, but wasn't working in North America either. So again, the board struggled with this for a while, and in late 2009 decided that what they would try to do is get a pool of HR professionals from around the world outside of the U.S. together and see if we could define a body of knowledge that would be common to all HR professionals regardless of where they were practicing. So these would be sort of the macro HR issues and topics that every HR practitioner would have to deal with. And the challenge was making sure that we could find enough of things in common that we could develop a full-range exam for. So we brought this group of individuals together. We drafted a test body of knowledge. We developed a survey and sent it out to thousands of HR individuals around the world. We got about 1,000 responses back, and we were able to develop a body of knowledge that really looked at the macro issues in HR and was common in terms of HR practice around the world, and that's what became the body of knowledge for the HR management professional. As we were doing this research, it became obvious to us that there were many other HR professionals around the world in more entry-level or early career responsibilities than the HR management professional, and therefore we developed the HR business professional, which was a little more of a technical and operational kind of focus, again, common around the world regardless of where you practiced, and we basically developed a second credential for the more early career HR professional. So now we had something that was pretty comparable to both the PHR and the SPHR, but without the U.S. specific law component and more focused on a common body of knowledge at both of these levels around the world. And that's where we ended up with the HRBP and the HRMP.
To be clear a little, so someone who currently has their PHR or SPHR or is considering getting their PHR, SPHR based in the U.S., they are not eligible for the human resource management professional or human resource business professional, or they are. Can you get a little clarified? Are these just non-U.S. based certifications? I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
They are recommended for non-U.S. based HR professionals, David, and as such, we do not offer them within the United States. We feel that we have those products, the PHR and the SPHR, for the individuals who are practicing here. But again, for individuals who are not located here and for whom the U.S.-based employment law component is not a useful measure, we do have these two new products to offer, and they're offered in computer-based testing centers, the same network that we offer in the United States, only in our outside U.S. network around the world. So folks are able to take these exams in countries that are close to their home, their place of work, and under the same type of process. It's just a slightly different addition a slightly different type of body of knowledge.
So would it be the recommendation that for somebody who works for an international multi, multi-country corporation that may be based in the U.S. but is currently overseas and working in a foreign country, you'd still say that the GPHR is the proper one for them? Or would they be able to take one or both? And because I'm trying to get some clarification around this whole global certification based on the U.S., but if you're overseas, just a little clarification around that.
Sure, no problem. We actually market our products kind of in two different portfolios, sort of domestic portfolio, which is the PHR and the SPHR, and our California specialty certification, and then the global certifications, the HRBP and the HRMP for folks located outside of the United States. And the GPHR kind of crosses both of those portfolios. If you are working for a U.S. multinational but you're posted overseas, or you are seeking an assignment overseas, again, somewhere where you'd be dealing with issues that cross borders and have unique concerns, things like immigration issues, like tax issues, like benefits issues as they cross countries and national requirements, then perhaps the GPHR is the exam for you. If you are more of an in-country practitioner where you're not looking at those cross-border issues and you're based outside of the United States, then that's the product really where we're trying to focus you towards, the HRBP and the HRMP.
Well, that's definitely clearer, because I think now that gives listeners an understanding of exactly which one they may be interested in as they're looking at their their career paths and what they need to do. We're talking with Linda Anguish. She is the Director of Certification Products for the Human Resource Certification Institute, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
In today's digital age of instant communication, the art of conversation is being lost. Too often, verbal communication is reduced to shouting, not talking. Join me, Steve Woods, also known as Steve-O, for Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, for inspired conversations with extraordinary guests. We'll talk sports, health, green, and life its own self. Catch Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on News Talk WLOB, AM 1310, streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with Linda Anguish. She is the Director of Certification Products for the Human Resource Certification Institute. Linda, we've talked a little about these two new certifications that are now out there. One of the things that I think will be important for listeners to understand is, take us through, the pilot program that set this up. You kind of talked about the surveys that came out, but take us through how this was brought together and why people will find value in it.
Absolutely. Well, the development of the credentials was a very interesting process, particularly because we knew we were going to have an audience of HR professionals from around the globe, and so we wanted to be very careful in our exam development processes to make sure they were valid and reliable. So we basically recruited, as we do with all of our exams, panels of subject matter experts to actually write the exam items themselves. These are HR practitioners from around the world. Again, in this case, we looked for some specific skills. Number one, an individual would have had to practice outside the U.S., and we made sure we had a good representative sampling of the geographic areas. We also made sure that everyone was a non-native English speaker. They all spoke English now and had taken one of our certification exams in English, but it did make them easy for them to concentrate on writing in a simplified English style, or what we call a global English, that's easier for individuals who are non-native English speakers to comprehend and to test on. We also decided, because many of our subject matter experts had shared with us that the kind of credentialing testing we do, which is basically multiple choice exams, is not a familiar testing modality outside of the United States. So we decided we needed to give people a sense of what they were going to be facing when they took the credentialing exam. And so we developed what we called a credential readiness assessment. And it's a two-part test that after someone applied for the exam, they actually take it at home at their computer, and it gives them sample types of questions they will see on the exam. It also asks them questions about their practical on-the-job experience. And at the end of the assessment, they receive a score in each of the functional areas that are covered on the exam, and it tells them how well prepared they seem to be tested in that area. So we had mentioned before, talking about exam preparation, where that's really important. If it's an area you don't have much practical experience in and you didn't score very well on those practice questions, then those are the kinds of things that you will want to focus on in terms of exam preparation. And finally, we talked before about our strategic partner, SHRM. We worked with them to develop, participated with us in terms of developing the body of knowledge, and then they took that body of knowledge and they developed certification preparation materials for us. And basically, those materials were provided to folks who agreed to participate in the pilot. So they basically were able to use them to prepare for the exams. And at the same time, they gave SHRM feedback on how well the preparation products worked for them. So it was a very nice kind of mutually cooperative arrangement between us and the pilot participants and SHRM. We also were able to work with another partner, and that is the Deloitte Consulting Organization, who let us administer the exam in their facilities around the world. And so again, we had a very good representation. We had 49 different countries where these exams were administered, and nearly 1,000 candidates that sat for them. And so when they were done, our testing development vendor analyzed all the results and was able to tell us, yes, this was a good, solid, valid exam. It tested equally well as you would expect it to, regardless of your geographic location. And then we knew we were going to be able to take that pilot exam and further develop it and have it become part of our regular portfolio, which it now has become.
So these two new assessments, which are really focused on the overseas market outside of the United States, have really become a standard now. So there are now two certifications that can be done globally that equate to, in some ways, the two certifications here in the U.S., whether you're talking about the SPHR or PHR. Would that be a good way of assessing the two descriptions between the two different programs?
I think it would. The one difference, again, is that the PHR and SPHR do have the U.S. employment law-based component. For the HRMP, because we are not able to test on every country's employment law, we do require people to present as part of their eligibility criteria evidence that they have knowledge in those areas. And whether that's been gained through a college program, through some type of training program they've taken, perhaps a local certification that they've earned in their country on their local employment law. We accept multiple measures, but they do have to present evidence that they have knowledge in that area. It's just not included in the particular exam that they're taking with us.
And I think that's an important part. So there are pre qualifications that have to be met prior to being able to take these two new exams, correct? Other than what you just described.
Yes. Depending on your educational level and your prior level of HR experience, there's a combination of the two that is required, and they vary based on the exam. Another important differentiator between the two exams, of course, is what area of HR are you really working on. If you're working in the technical and operational side, kind of the hands-on HR management components, then you'd probably be more interested in taking the HR business professional a little bit perhaps earlier in your career. And then if you have progressed to an area where you're working less on the technical aspects, but more on the strategic or policymaking areas of HR, then you would be interested perhaps in the more senior certification of the HR management professional.
No, that makes absolute sense. So as we count down here, we have about another 2 minutes left on this show. I'd like you to kind of give me an overview of, so far, the program's been out there about a year and a half or so. How many professionals have been certified so far?
We're really pleased to say we have over 800 between the two certifications. A few more HR management professionals than HR business professionals, but they're catching up quickly. We are now, as I mentioned, offering the exams in computer-based testing centers, and we have actually two exam windows. So you have a 30-day period during the month of March when you may take the exam, and another 30-day period during the month of September. And we are currently in the registration period right now for March of 2014.
So if somebody was interested in getting a hold of information on this program, where should they go?
Best thing to do would be to go to our website, which is www.hrci.org. And when you go on there, the first bullet you'll see is our certifications. And if you just click on there, you'll see them listed individually, and you can find information on both of the certifications as well as our other core certifications as well.
No, that's great. Linda, it's been great having you on the show today, and certainly anybody that's interested in looking for this information can go to hrpowerhour.com, and the audio of this show as well as the link to the website she just produced, the hrci.org, will be on that site for you so that you can go on and click there and get all the information that you need. Again, Linda, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me, David.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Today we're talking with Lori Parham, State Director of the AARP. And you may be listening to yourselves out there saying, why do I have the AARP on the HR Power Hour? Because actually they're a great partner in understanding why and how an aging workforce can actually help people. And so that is why you're here today, Lori.
It is.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, I appreciate it. And certainly we've known one another from the WLB radio segments that we do in the morning. And certainly today we're really going to be talking to HR professionals and business leaders about how your organization can help them understand the value of an older workforce.
That's right. A lot of folks think of AARP as the American Association of Retired Persons, and we do have many members who are retired, but we're actually just AARP, the letters, or as some people like to say, the ARP, because we do have a large number of our members who are still working. Between the ages of 50 and 64, even older than that, folks, sometimes they like to continue working, they like to feel productive and like they're contributing, and for others, they don't have a choice but to continue working because they don't have enough for retirement, and so they'll be working as long as they can to be putting money away and paying bills.
So let's take that and let's talk about the fact that your organization can help companies understand how to use workers in an efficient way when they get older. Talk about the part of your organization that does that, why it's important.
Sure. So we really take a multi-pronged approach to the 50-plus worker issue. We do a lot of work communicating with companies about the value of older workers. If you look at the research, it shows that older workers, well, first of all, they have a lot of knowledge and expertise. They're committed, and they also, kind of the basic things you're looking for in an employee, they show up on time, they actually continue to come to work, they're dependable, and they can be great mentors in the workplace to younger workers as well. And so we actually have a best employers program where we work with employers. They can fill out an application and show us how they have policies in place for 50 plus workers. And we've actually awarded our 50 best employers award for people over 50 to some companies right here in Maine. Chimbro Construction has won the award more than once, including this year in 2013, and L.L. Bean has as well. So it's really working with them and then really highlighting companies that have best practices in place, because some people actually already do get it.
You're a national organization. Of course, the show's heard across many different states. Are those awards that companies can get outside of Maine?
Yes. So I love to use the example of a health system in Florida that actually has a program in place for snowbirds so that they guarantee employment to people who come down and spend half the year in Florida. So you've got nurses, physicians who may have retired but wanted to come back to work and they've still got their certifications, or other positions at the hospital where they know they're guaranteed every year when they come back in December, say, that for 6 months they'll have employment. So it is a national program, and I'm really proud that there are companies right here in Maine who have been recognized.
Do you still hear that companies are challenged at times in knowing how to best handle older workers? And I say handle with a quotation around it, because while they come in with knowledge and experience, there are some challenges sometimes on the tech side, especially. Mm-hmm. They may be not as tech knowledgeable as today's workforce needs. How do you see the partnering with employers to improve this?
That's a great question. And we have heard concerns, and we actually see it even with a new program we have that I'll talk about in a minute, that especially for people over 50 who've been in jobs for a long time, and the boomer generation is more likely to have been in one job than younger generations, maybe not as much so as their parents, the greatest generation. But they did the one thing they did, and they haven't had to keep up with technology as much. So this is an issue. What we're finding is that if organizations embrace a multi-generational approach to the workforce, that there's learning in both directions, and that has been really helpful. But internally, it's not just about bringing people on board. It's also the culture and how you get folks who may not necessarily speak the same language talking with each other. So it really has to be a part of HR policy and thinking and their approach to the entire workforce in a company or organization.
When you're seeing success stories, and we're talking about probably especially mentoring programs that have younger generation and older generation working together for the tech side, as well as the experience on the other side, bringing that down. Can you talk about a success story that you've seen in the marketplace today that, as the listeners listen today, can say, I can relate to that and think about how I could do that in my organization?
Sure. Well, it really comes down to the suite of options that you might offer your employees. And often what's good for an older worker may be good for a younger worker too. But it's so ensuring job training, and so providing through the workforce, whether it's internal opportunities or external opportunities, investing in that kind of training for your staff. It may be the kinds of flexibility, the flexible policies that you put in place that might help an older person who's caring for an aging parent, but might also help a younger person who has caregiving responsibility around kids. Scripps is one or one company that has had good success in the multi-generational space. But it really is, it's bringing people on board, providing the range of opportunities, but then having thinking culturally about how people are working together, and providing opportunities to bring people together. Maybe you have an employee council where you recruit people across ages, for example, and you could do the same thing beyond age diversity. You could do the same thing with race or gender as well. But really making sure it's not just saying, well, I'm a multi-generational company because I hire young people and older people, but it's also being kind of deliberate about how those folks are working together.
You know, I was looking on your website in terms of the AARP, and you talk a lot about best employers. We talked a little mm-hmm. about that in terms of over 50 and award winners. Are there criteria for that? And can companies, as we're thinking about learning the best ways to deal with older workers and help them, because mm-hmm. we want everybody to be successful. I say it all the time. 99.9% of all employers want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes they don't know how to right. do the right thing. So tell us about the new program mm-hmm. and how that they can become award winners in this program.
Sure. So we last year we launched a relationship with LinkedIn called Work Reimagined, and you can go out to workreimagined.org if you are 50 plus and looking for work, and it will point you to companies who have taken a pledge that say we are invested in and we care about and appreciate a 50 plus workforce. So at a time when folks are concerned that they're older and won't be able to get hired, these are companies who say come to us. And so companies, organizations can actually take the pledge, the Work Reimagined pledge, and then be listed as a company or organization that supports the 50-plus worker. One thing that we're working to do is for a lot of people over 50 who may be less interested or engaged in social media, it's recognizing that the traditional resume, things are very different today.
They sure are.
Wow. So the importance of a site like LinkedIn and getting connected in a different type of way and trying to provide that kind of advice and support to our members who are looking for work. What are some of the things that would fit into the award category that a 50-plus worker is looking for? Flexibility. I mentioned that earlier around issues like caregiving. Telecommuting, the ability to work from away. Sometimes folks may have to make a move to be closer to an aging parent. And of course, it depends on the business and whether it works. Condensed work schedules. So maybe you're splitting caregiving with another sibling, so you really need Fridays to check in on an aging parent. You'd work more hours Monday through Thursday. Companies that are looking at the half-time, so part-time employment, bringing in people. It works so well with the snowbirds going south because you've also got a bigger population in the winter months, so it's a win-win. Phased retirement, so not just having people end on a Friday and be done after 20 years of service, but allow that phased retirement, which helps them bridge to full retirement, but then keeps folks on board who can help as you're bringing in and recruiting younger employees. So those are some
These are all great ideas, Lori, and we are talking with Lori Parham, State Director of the AARP here in Maine. Do you find that more and more companies are starting to talk about some of these new processes? I mean, we are an older workforce now, and not just here in Maine, but across the whole country. It is. We've got more in the workforce, even though we have 10,000 supposedly a day retiring, quote unquote retiring. You know, the reality is that we have more workers that are older in the workplace.
We are seeing greater trends towards flexibility, and we believe it really is going to be the wave of the future. I mean, and technology more and more is allowing us to do this. I'd say for good or for bad, I can work from anywhere, you know, and so it's great if I've got to be somewhere. I'm lucky to work for an organization that does provide flexibility for caregiving needs, for example. So when my grandfather was very ill, I was able to get on a plane and take my laptop and work the whole time if I needed to. Of course, it does mean that people can find you anywhere, so it could be hard to unplug. But I think more and more this is the way we're headed, and it's going to be important for companies to continue to get ahead of the curve.
I think it's interesting that the generation who you hear from that says the younger generation in this particular case doesn't come in on time, doesn't do their work from 9 to 5, is now some of them needing the flexibility of some of the things they rail about to now make it so that they can do what they need to do in the older age. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
How it's kind of twisted all around in terms of that a little bit.
Right.
You know, but hey, that's okay. They're learning. We're all learning on how to make that happen. What are some of the key things that you could say are tips that employers could do to work with your organization to make this smoother for them and get some training and development?
Sure. So first and foremost, I would love to see more Maine organizations sign the Work Reimagined Pledge. And you can go out to the site and see, and I'll actually share my email. I'm at lparham, P-A-R-H-A-M, at AARP.org. What I can do if folks want to contact me is share a suite of information. So the kind of guidelines for the Best Employers Program, a copy of the pledge so you can actually see what you're pledging to do. It's pretty straightforward. There's nothing binding there. It just says, hey, we value older workers. We'd love to have them. And then point them, the website, which actually has information for employers as well as people looking for work. We do a lot of work on the resume side and all of that, is aarp.org/work, where you can find a bunch of resources as well.
No, that's great. We're talking with Lauren Parham. She's the state director of the AARP in Maine. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back on News Talk WLLB. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking to Lori Parham. She is the state director of the AARP.
I am, and boy, you can get tongue-tied saying that.
You can. I've always said it about, I don't know, 100, 200 times at this point. You would think I have no problem saying it all the time. So, you know what's interesting? One of the things that I know about your organization is you help older people, older workers, in many different areas. We've been talking about the workforce, but a lot of people might say, hey, I want to become an employer myself. I want to open a business. I'm in the second half of my life, third half of my life. I'm in my final job. And certainly at Career Management Associates, we hear this all the time. You know, I'm 58, I'm 59, I'm 60. I just want to work 5-6 more years, but I want to do it on my terms, my terms.
Right.
And I'm in a position maybe where, you know, I've done well, or I have a little capital or I can have a business plan and go out there and try to think about being a self-employed person. Tell me how the AARP can help with that.
Sure. That's a great question, especially in Maine. People between the ages of 50 and 64 are the largest growing group of entrepreneurs in the state. And many are who we call encore entrepreneurs because they are looking at their what's next. And I mentioned workreimagined.org. It's part of a larger site called Life Reimagined. And it walks you through a set of cards that help you kind of determine what it is you might want to do next for people who are able to make that decision. For others who've lost a job, they've just decided that they're going to go into business for themselves and they may not know where to begin. So for the last couple of years, we've actually partnered with the Small Business Administration across the country, and we've actually done some events right here in Maine during Encore Entrepreneur Month, which is April. And we'll be working with the SBA again this year, along with Coastal Enterprises, Inc. We've done some work with them through their Women's Business Center. And we've done roundtables, brown bags, on a range of issues from technology, web security, to just more of the basics about financing and how you get started. And so if you go out to the work site for AARP, you'll also find links to the work that we're doing with the SBA. And it's also out at the Work Reimagined site. So all of the tools kind of go together. But it really does cover everything from how you start with financing to once you're up and running, and then all of the different kinds of issues you'll need to be prepared for from the technology side, for example, to the hiring side.
Is this usually staffed with volunteers who have done this in the past? Is this kind of like a quote-unquote SCORE, which is another organization out there that helps that? How does that all play together?
So we've actually, one of the events we did included SCORE too, so thank you for mentioning that. What we do is look for opportunities and interests locally, and we use the Encore Entrepreneur Month because just to raise awareness during that time, although we're willing to talk about the issues kind of any time of year, of course. On our site, we have a mix of resources, some that will be, we do live webinars and live talks with people who do have experience, we just have different columnists who are writing for us, so you can go to their, to links to their information. So it really depends on what issue you want. We've got resume help if you've got questions about a resume, so it's a real range. Out at Work Reimagined or Life Reimagined, you can also do online chats. There are a lot of resources. So most of what I'm talking about is web or online based. With the and we believe
do you find
this
that a challenge? I don't mean to interrupt, but do you find that a challenge with some of the older folk who don't have a lot of knowledge on web, line, and based? I mean, is there a partnership somewhere to help bring that together?
Sure. So that's a great question, and it's something I'm keenly aware of here in Maine as state director, because our membership, we have a membership that skews older here. And we also know that we have broadband issues in some places too still. But most of what we have is online. When I get calls from people, and I had one gentleman call me who lost his job unexpectedly and was really not sure where to begin, but was it crazy about the web resources? He came in and I spent an hour with him and walked him through stuff, and then did a bit of follow up on email. Now, that's not my full time job, but it's really nice when I can help people like that. So where we can't help with the one on one, and I don't want to sell AARP as a job counselor. What we try to do is provide resources that help people individually as they're going through the process. We would try to link them up with people locally.
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. So we've kind of talked a little bit about entrepreneurship. We've kind of talked about aging in the workplace. We've kind of talked about how your organization can help employers and employees in this situation do that. What are some of the other things that AARP does? People may know what they do and some of the help for employers or help for employees. What are some of the things that you think about that really make sense for HR business leaders to know?
Well, there have been some changes federally due to some Supreme Court decisions. There have been some changes federally to age discrimination laws that I'm sure a lot of folks are aware of, but that's an issue we're following very closely. We did a survey last year and found a large number of people in Maine, older workers, feel that they've been victims of age discrimination. And so one of the things we do in trying to educate employers is to really talk about and show the research around around the value. But there, we're also working at the federal level to restore some protections for older workers that were impacted by a Supreme Court decision a couple of years ago that really put the entire burden of proving age discrimination on the employee, which can be very difficult to do. So this is just bringing us back to where we were under federal law, because now we're seeing more and more an erosion of and more people coming forward with concerns, and they really have no recourse. So so we do kind of the education side for employers and employees, and then we also do some advocacy work around age discrimination as well.
So we're seeing an increase in that. Do you think that, I guess my initial question is it because there are more aging workforce, people out there? So the question is that percentage really different, or is it just a percentage of the group as a total?
Well, I think, you know, when you're dealing with a tight economy, that can be a real issue. And so we saw a lot of people over 50 who were laid off during the Great Recession. And unfortunately, when they lose a job, they tend to be out of the workforce for a longer period of time and have a much harder time getting back in. You hear a lot of anecdotes, but again, is it perception? What's really going on? And that's why we think it's just so important to be having the conversations with HR professionals and employers that they shouldn't just look the other way if they see someone who's graying a little. I have a volunteer who he's no longer my volunteer. He had to move to Connecticut because he couldn't, and he was in IT, so it's not like he wasn't in a field that is hiring, but he was ready to dye his hair because he was convinced that the age was the factor, and he had all the experience. He was actually someone who was up to speed on technology, and so it's just something to be aware of. And here in Maine, what I've said, and you've heard me say this before, is that we need to look at recruiting a younger workforce, but we need to look at the value across the spectrum, because we do have a lot of older people here, and they're not going anywhere. So we need a multi-pronged approach, a multi-generational strategy, as it were, when we look at our workforce.
No, I absolutely agree, and I think that what you bring today is a lot of information that employers and employees can really think about, of how they can partner with your organization to either help, learn, develop, and partner to make it work within here, and not only in Maine, but throughout the country in terms of what this works. I really appreciate you being on the show today, but before you go, I have to tell you one quick story, because I think it's important and the audience will appreciate this. So I'm not going to say my age, but I'm just going to say I'm not 50 quite yet, okay? I'm just not 50 quite yet. So I got to say that the other day, and this was a few months ago, I started receiving some wonderful materials from your organization. Now, as an employer, I appreciate those materials, but as a under 50-year-old person, I still have not wrapped my head around being quite 50 yet. So I want to let you know that I looked at the material, I looked at the packet, and I felt very good about the fact that I walked into my office and shredded that material through the shredder, because it's just not till I turn 50 that I'm going to feel good about that. Well, so do you forgive me for that?
I forgive you.
Okay.
And I will be at your doorstep when you turn 50.
Oh, I bet you will. No, I appreciate that. And all kidding aside, your group does a great job, great advocacy, great understanding of how it can help employers. And I've heard you speak about that and fully support it. So, Lori, thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
And now your HR tip of the week. According to TrendHR.com, in an article by Rich Henson, there are six areas that need to be documented at all times if you're dealing with employees. One, if you're going to be coaching them. Two, if you're going to be doing a performance review. Three, if you're going to be disciplining them. Four, if you're going to have to make a termination. Five, if someone files a formal complaint. Six, if claims are made. Do you do these? Are these important? Of course, you know they are. So that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with Deborah Weiss-Ford. She is a managing partner for Portsmouth, New Hampshire-based attorney firm Jackson & Lewis. She is going to be speaking about, we all know them, we all deal with them, the, quote, jerk at work. How do you know the person behaving like a jerk is really a jerk? and not just having a bad day or a bad interaction. We're going to talk about how you handle that and what you do and the proper way to make it work for you. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.